University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. November Examination Session, 2008. English as a Second Language. Paper 4. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, center number, and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. Where exactly will the driver find petrol? Give 2 details.
Excuse me, do you live locally? We need petrol and can't find a station anywhere.
There are none here in the village. Keep going on the main road, and there is a petrol station at the supermarket after the roundabout, which leads into the next town. It's a long way away.
Thanks so much for your help. Excuse me, do you live locally? We need petrol and can't find a station anywhere.
There are none here in the village. Keep going on the main road, and there is a petrol station at the supermarket after the roundabout, which leads into the next town. It's a long way away.
Thanks so much for your help.
Question 2. Which 3 flavours of ice cream will the friends purchase?
Let's have an ice cream. It's so hot today. I'll have toffee. Which flavour do you want?
Chocolate chip, please. No, strawberry. No, lemon. That's my final decision.
Good. And I know that Mina likes vanilla-flavoured ice cream, so I'll get that for her. Let's have an ice cream. It's so hot today. I'll have toffee. Which flavour do you want?
Chocolate chip, please. No, strawberry. No, lemon. That's my final decision.
Good. And I know that Mina likes vanilla-flavoured ice cream, so I'll get that for her.
Question 3. Why must Ibrahim arrive for his sports match by 7, and how will he get there on time?
What time does the match start this evening?
7:30, Ibrahim, but you need to be there by 7 to practice a bit first. You'll need to catch the 6:10 bus. The next one gets there too late.
Right, I'll be there. What time does the match start this evening?
7:30, Ibrahim, but you need to be there by 7 to practice a bit first. You'll need to catch the 6:10 bus. The next one gets there too late.
Right, I'll be there.
Question 4. Which three items must Chang bring along with the birthday cake?
It's Kirsty's birthday on Thursday. Let's take her to the beach for a picnic after school.
Good idea, Chang. I'll bring some crisps and orange juice to drink.
And I'll bring a birthday cake for her.
Don't forget the candles plus matches. Oh, and a knife to cut it with.
It's Kirsty's birthday on Thursday. Let's take her to the beach for a picnic after school.
Good idea, Chang. I'll bring some crisps and orange juice to drink.
And I'll bring a birthday cake for her.
Don't forget the candles plus matches. Oh, and a knife to cut it with.
Question 5. How can a student get a place on the exchange visit?
Listen, everybody. Our college has plans for an exchange trip to Japan next summer. You will live with a host family and attend school with an exchange partner. During the autumn, that same student will come to stay with you in return. There are only 25 places on this trip. Be sure you fill in the section on your application form explaining why you should be chosen to go. That is how we'll decide who will fill the places. Listen, everybody. Our college has plans for an exchange trip to Japan next summer. You will live with a host family and attend school with an exchange partner. During the autumn, that same student will come to stay with you in return. There are only 25 places on this trip. Be sure you fill in the section on your application form explaining why you should be chosen to go. That is how we'll decide who will fill the places.
Question 6. Why is the flight delayed and what is being offered by the airline?
Excuse me, I'd like to check in for my flight.
I'm sorry, but your flight to Nairobi has been delayed due to freezing fog. As it's so late in the evening now, the airline is offering passengers booked on this flight a free overnight stay at the airport hotel with breakfast.
Okay, but I must contact my relatives. When do you think that the flight will leave?
We hope that the flight will be able to depart early in the morning. It all depends on the weather.
Excuse me, I'd like to check in for my flight.
I'm sorry, but your flight to Nairobi has been delayed due to freezing fog. As it's so late in the evening now, the airline is offering passengers booked on this flight a free overnight stay at the airport hotel with breakfast.
Okay, but I must contact my relatives. When do you think that the flight will leave?
We hope that the flight will be able to depart early in the morning. It all depends on the weather.
That is the last question of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following interview with a marine archaeologist and then complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
Good evening and welcome to our new career series. Tonight we welcome Yanis Georgiou, who is a marine archaeologist. Yanis, please could you tell us what that means?
Certainly. I have studied to become an archaeologist. That involves 3 long years at university and much practical field work. Now I have chosen to specialise in underwater archaeology, that is, marine archaeology.
So you had to train as a diver too?
Of course, but I loved that. As a young boy, I was already interested in diving, and ideas of buried treasure filled my mind even then.
Is that what you search for, buried treasure?
Yes, but I've never found any. Seriously, though, all archaeological finds underwater are treasures, since they tell us so much about past civilizations. We search shipwrecks, lost cargoes, submerged landscapes, old harbours, and areas of submarine geological and archaeological interest. We are currently holding an exhibition of some of our finds locally. It's called the Exhibition of Sunken History.
I've read about that on your website.
Yes, our website is good for information about marine archaeology around the world. The address is www.nas.org.
So, do you spend all your working hours underwater?
Oh, no. For most of the time, I'm a normal land-based archaeologist. I have to record and catalogue new discoveries and carry out surveys. I also publish articles about new finds for our press releases, local news stations, and our quarterly newsletter. I also have to attend conferences, either as a delegate or as a speaker, and sometimes that involves travel all over the world.
What would your normal day be like, then?
If I'm here and working on a project, then I will firstly do some research about what I'm expecting to find. Then the dive will take place, probably just a survey rather than trying to recover objects from the seabed. Remember, some of these items are huge. Ships and most other underwater finds have to be lifted to the surface by crane. After the dive, I write up a report on it and prepare for the next day's work.
I suppose your dives are dependent on good weather and tidal conditions.
Yes, our researchers set all that up. Obviously, if the weather breaks or bad weather is forecast, we wait for more favourable conditions.
So how can we become involved and help your work?
By raising awareness about marine archaeology. You can come to our Sunken History exhibition. You'll be invited to handle artefacts and treasures recovered from the seabed. You can also watch the webcam of an actual dive, learn some of our techniques, and see the tools we use underwater. Above all, we aim to give people all over the world access to their own maritime heritage. By that I mean everything which lies beneath their coastal waters. Our website also contains details of activity days, lectures and events. Add yourself to our email newsletter list too, and we'll keep you up to date with our finds.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good evening, and welcome to our new career series. Tonight, we welcome Yanis Georgiou, who is a marine archaeologist. Yanis, please could you tell us what that means?
Certainly. I have studied to become an archaeologist. That involves 3 long years at university and much practical field work. Now I have chosen to specialise in underwater archaeology, that is, marine archaeology.
So you had to train as a diver too?
Of course, but I loved that. As a young boy, I was already interested in diving, and ideas of buried treasure filled my mind even then.
Is that what you search for, buried treasure?
Yes, but I've never found any. Seriously, though, all archaeological finds underwater are treasures, since they tell us so much about past civilizations. We search shipwrecks, lost cargoes, submerged landscapes, old harbours, and areas of submarine geological and archaeological interest. We are currently holding an exhibition of some of our finds locally. It's called the Exhibition of Sunken History.
I've read about that on your website.
Yes, our website is good for information about marine archaeology around the world. The address is www.nas.org.
So, do you spend all your working hours underwater?
Oh, no. For most of the time, I'm a normal land-based archaeologist. I have to record and catalogue new discoveries and carry out surveys. I also publish articles about new finds for our press releases, local news stations, and our quarterly newsletter. I also have to attend conferences, either as a delegate or as a speaker, and sometimes that involves travel all over the world.
What would your normal day be like, then?
If I'm here and working on a project, then I will firstly do some research about what I'm expecting to find. Then the dive will take place, probably just a survey rather than trying to recover objects from the seabed. Remember, some of these items are huge. Ships and most other underwater finds have to be lifted to the surface by crane. After the dive, I write up a report on it and prepare for the next day's work.
I suppose your dives are dependent on good weather and tidal conditions.
Yes, our researchers set all that up. Obviously, if the weather breaks or bad weather is forecast, we wait for more favourable conditions.
So how can we become involved and help your work?
By raising awareness about marine archaeology. You can come to our Sunken History exhibition. You'll be invited to handle artefacts and treasures recovered from the seabed. You can also watch the webcam of an actual dive, learn some of our techniques, and see the tools we use underwater. Above all, we aim to give people all over the world access to their own maritime heritage. By that I mean everything which lies beneath their coastal waters. Our website also contains details of activity days, lectures and events. Add yourself to our email newsletter list too, and we'll keep you up to date with our finds.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following interview about some newly discovered animal species and then complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
Welcome to Science World. Today we're going to find out about some species of animals which have only just been discovered. They are completely new to mankind. Scientists had thought from fossil records that some of these must have died out as humankind began. Here to tell us all about these exciting new discoveries is science reporter Annika Borman.
Yes, you've probably heard the exciting news headlines about the 8 previously unknown types of creature found in a cave near the city of Ramleh in central Israel.
Yes, it made world news. Tell us more.
The largest animal belongs to the family called crustacean, like crabs. In fact, it's a sort of white shrimp. It's white because it had no need for pigment as protection against the sun's rays.
Amazing.
Another of these species looks like a white scorpion and is completely blind. Why? Well, it's always lived in complete darkness, so no need for sight.
In darkness? Didn't it ever go outside of the cave where it was discovered then?
Well, the cave was only uncovered during drilling at a quarry where a team was trying to extract rock for local use. The cave is underground and is connected to a lake. This explains the presence of the new white shrimp in the water. A network of passages extends underground for more than a mile out of this cave. All of this is 120 metres underground.
So how long had it all been there then?
Scientists think it dates back 5 million years, when the cave area was actually part of the Mediterranean Sea. There could be many other ancient life forms in there, and the good thing is that the ones we've found are still alive.
That is wonderful.
Yes, but did you hear also on the news that a new species of mouse has been found in Cyprus? It's being called a living fossil. It's so old.
How do you know this breed of mouse had not previously been identified? How is it different to any other type of mouse?
It has bigger ears, eyes and teeth than indigenous mice living in the area. It's thought it's part of a species of mouse which went extinct as a result of early man's activities.
How do you know that then?
Scientists compared the shape of the teeth of this mouse with fossils of mice collected in Cyprus. This study showed that the species had arrived well before the human colonization of the island 9 to 10,000 years ago, and then it disappeared.
Why?
Scientists assume that settlers had brought in mice which overtook this newly discovered breed. You see, when humans arrived, they brought with them strong mainland species which ate or seized the food of all native creatures.
So why is it a living fossil then?
Because it arrived before humans and is still alive, and it compares well with the old fossil mice. Also, it shows us what the creatures were like in Cyprus 10,000 years ago. Very different from today.
There are many new finds at the moment, aren't there? Surely most of them are in tropical regions with low human populations.
Exactly so. That's why all of these finds are unusual. The first ones, the shrimp and scorpion and others, below ground and therefore sealed off from civilization in Israel. The second find, the mouse living amid modern life in Cyprus. Both highly unusual and significant discoveries.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Welcome to Science World. Today we're going to find out about some species of animals which have only just been discovered. They are completely new to mankind. Scientists had thought from fossil records that some of these must have died out as humankind began. Here to tell us all about these exciting new discoveries is science reporter Annika Borman.
Yes, you've probably heard the exciting news headlines about the 8 previously unknown types of creature found in a cave near the city of Ramleh in central Israel.
Yes, it made world news. Tell us more.
The largest animal belongs to the family called crustacean, like crabs. In fact, it's a sort of white shrimp. It's white because it had no need for pigment as protection against the sun's rays.
Amazing.
Another of these species looks like a white scorpion and is completely blind. Why? Well, it's always lived in complete darkness, so no need for sight.
In darkness? Didn't it ever go outside of the cave where it was discovered then?
Well, the cave was only uncovered during drilling at a quarry where a team was trying to extract rock for local use. The cave is underground and is connected to a lake. This explains the presence of the new white shrimp in the water. A network of passages extends underground for more than a mile out of this cave. All of this is 120 metres underground.
So how long had it all been there then?
Scientists think it dates back 5 million years, when the cave area was actually part of the Mediterranean Sea. There could be many other ancient life forms in there, and the good thing is that the ones we've found are still alive.
That is wonderful.
Yes, but did you hear also on the news that a new species of mouse has been found in Cyprus? It's being called a living fossil. It's so old.
How do you know this breed of mouse had not previously been identified? How is it different to any other type of mouse?
It has bigger ears, eyes and teeth than indigenous mice living in the area. It's thought it's part of a species of mouse which went extinct as a result of early man's activities.
How do you know that then?
Scientists compared the shape of the teeth of this mouse with fossils of mice collected in Cyprus. This study showed that the species had arrived well before the human colonization of the island 9 to 10,000 years ago, and then it disappeared.
Why?
Scientists assume that settlers had brought in mice which overtook this newly discovered breed. You see, when humans arrived, they brought with them strong mainland species which ate or seized the food of all native creatures.
So why is it a living fossil then?
Because it arrived before humans and is still alive, and it compares well with the old fossil mice. Also, it shows us what the creatures were like in Cyprus 10,000 years ago. Very different from today.
There are many new finds at the moment, aren't there? Surely most of them are in tropical regions with low human populations.
Exactly so. That's why all of these finds are unusual. The first ones, the shrimp and scorpion and others, below ground and therefore sealed off from civilization in Israel. The second find, the mouse living amid modern life in Cyprus. Both highly unusual and significant discoveries.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment, you will hear question 9. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 9. Listen to the following interview about a new tunnel and then answer the questions below. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello, and welcome to Istanbul and to the project of the century. 150 years ago, Sultan Abdulmajid dreamed of joining two continents together here by building a tunnel. Now, in the 21st century, this vision is about to become reality. Here is Khan Sami, chief engineer for the project.
Yes, the construction work is underway on the first rail tunnel beneath the Bosphorus Straits in Turkey. Istanbul has a unique position. It lies in both Europe and Asia, with water in between. The aim of the four-year project is to link the European and Asian sides of our city of Istanbul by using a 14-kilometre-long rail and road tunnel.
Oh, that will be a real asset to the city, won't it?
Certainly. It'll ease surface traffic congestion, make transport easier, and hopefully be strong enough to resist earthquakes in the region.
It sounds a very ambitious project.
Well, the whole project will cost $2.6 billion. The trouble is that while building the tunnel, we've come upon an archaeological find of great importance, and this has delayed us.
Tell us more.
We've discovered a 4th century port. It's what used to be called Constantinople, one of the busiest places in Byzantium. So far, 3 metres of the landing jetty have been uncovered. We found leather sandals, candle holders, and hairbrushes showing us what 4th century daily life was like. But our biggest find to date is a wooden boat, which is over 1,000 years old. We have also found a long stretch of 1st century city wall at the site of our planned 21st century railway terminus. We cannot begin work on our tunnel in that area now until all excavation work is completed.
So you've had to focus on other aspects and areas of the tunnel?
Exactly. As we speak, there are engineers working day and night out at sea. They're drilling beneath the waves, injecting tons of concrete into the soil of the seabed. This will strengthen the roof of the tunnel and help to make it more earthquake-proof before we begin the actual tunnelling.
Why are you doing that?
Because the route of the tunnel runs only 6 kilometres from an active fault line, which often gives rise to earth tremors in this area.
It all sounds terribly dangerous. Why not build a bridge instead?
We already have 2 bridges, and there's no room for a third. The same problem applies above ground anyway. The whole area is affected during earth tremors. The rail link in the planned tunnel alone could carry over 1 million passengers a day, which would reduce the numbers of boats on the waters of the Bosphorus, while also aiding traffic congestion on land. This city links Europe with Asia, and therefore it's extremely busy.
When will I be able to travel through the tunnel, then?
In 2010, we hope. It all depends on what else we find. As we dig, we're gradually uncovering history.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello, and welcome to Istanbul and to the project of the century. 150 years ago, Sultan Abdulmajid dreamed of joining 2 continents together here by building a tunnel. Now, in the 21st century, this vision is about to become reality. Here is Khan Sami, chief engineer for the project.
Yes, the construction work is underway on the first rail tunnel beneath the Bosphorus Straits in Turkey. Istanbul has a unique position. It lies in both Europe and Asia, with water in between. The aim of the 4-year project is to link the European and Asian sides of our city of Istanbul by using a 14-kilometre-long rail and road tunnel.
Oh, that will be a real asset to the city, won't it?
Certainly. It'll ease surface traffic congestion, make transport easier, and hopefully be strong enough to resist earthquakes in the region.
It sounds a very ambitious project.
Well, the whole project will cost $2.6 billion. The trouble is that while building the tunnel, we've come upon an archaeological find of great importance, and this has delayed us.
Tell us more.
We've discovered a 4th-century port. It's what used to be called Constantinople, one of the busiest places in Byzantium. So far, 3 metres of the landing jetty have been uncovered. We found leather sandals, candle holders, and hairbrushes, showing us what 4th century daily life was like. But our biggest find to date is a wooden boat, which is over 1,000 years old. We have also found a long stretch of 1st century city wall at the site of our planned 21st century railway terminus. We cannot begin work on our tunnel in that area now until all excavation work is completed.
So you've had to focus on other aspects and areas of the tunnel?
Exactly. As we speak, there are engineers working day and night out at sea. They're drilling beneath the waves, injecting tons of concrete into the soil of the seabed. This will strengthen the roof of the tunnel and help to make it more earthquake-proof before we begin the actual tunnelling.
Why are you doing that?
Because the route of the tunnel runs only 6 kilometres from an active fault line, which often gives rise to earth tremors in this area.
It all sounds terribly dangerous. Why not build a bridge instead?
We already have 2 bridges, and there's no room for a third. The same problem applies above ground anyway. The whole area is affected during earth tremors. The rail link in the planned tunnel alone could carry over 1 million passengers a day, which would reduce the numbers of boats on the waters of the Bosphorus, while also aiding traffic congestion on land. This city links Europe with Asia, and therefore it's extremely busy.
When will I be able to travel through the tunnel, then?
In 2010, we hope. It all depends on what else we find. As we dig, we're gradually uncovering history.
That is the end of question 9. In a moment, you will hear question 10. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about the solar system, and then answer the questions below. You will hear the talk twice.
What actually is our solar system? Put simply, it consists of the Sun and the 8 official planets which orbit or travel around it. Also included are at least 3 dwarf planets, more than 130 moons of the planets, and many comets and asteroids. The solar system is often split into 3 parts. The inner system comprises the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. Then comes an asteroid belt in between Mars and Jupiter. Then follows the outer solar system, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Pluto was only discovered in 1930 and was traditionally the 9th planet of the system. However, since the planet's redefinition in 2006, it's now classified as a dwarf planet. These smaller planets have orbits around the Sun that take longer than 200 years to complete. Some new heavenly bodies have been admitted into our solar system in recent years too. They're Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, the largest spherical asteroid between Mars and Jupiter, and Charon, C-H-A-R-O-N, which is Pluto's moon. The largest body discovered and included in the solar system since Neptune's discovery has been called Eris, E-R-I-S, and there are 12 more potential planets on the solar system waiting list. So what is a planet? Traditionally, the word evolved from the Greek word for wanderer. This simply described an object which appeared to roam the sky. The new definition states that a planet must be in orbit around a star, but not be a star itself. It must also be large enough for its own gravity to pull it into an almost spherical shape. Earth, Mars, and the rest of the eight planets all conform to this pattern. Pluto's status as a planet, however, has been contested for many years. The icy world of Pluto is smaller and further away from the Sun than the other eight. Actually, it is 5.9 billion kilometres away from the Sun. In fact, at only 2,300 kilometres across, Pluto is smaller than some solar system moons. It takes Pluto about 250 Earth years to orbit the Sun, and that now puts it into the dwarf planet category. Advanced telescope technology has begun to reveal more and more far-off objects, which could perhaps be included in the solar system. The International Astronomical Union has had to draw up a policy to classify them. Astronomers have quickly realized that in a few years, we could have a total of 50 planets in our solar system. This is why they needed a new category of dwarf planet. The more planetary discoveries made, the greater the need for a redefinition of our solar system.
Now you will hear the talk again.
What actually is our solar system? Put simply, it consists of the Sun and the eight official planets which orbit or travel around it. Also included are at least three dwarf planets, more than 130 moons of the planets, and many comets and asteroids. The solar system is often split into three parts. The inner system comprises the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. Then comes an asteroid belt in between Mars and Jupiter. Then follows the outer solar system, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. Pluto was only discovered in 1930 and was traditionally the ninth planet of the system. However, since the planet's redefinition in 2006, it's now classified as a dwarf planet. These smaller planets have orbits around the Sun that take longer than 200 years to complete. Some new heavenly bodies have been admitted into our solar system in recent years too. They're Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, the largest spherical asteroid between Mars and Jupiter, and Charon, C-H-A-R-O-N, which is Pluto's moon. The largest body discovered and included in the solar system since Neptune's discovery has been called Eris, E-R-I-S, and there are 12 more potential planets on the solar system waiting list. So what is a planet? Traditionally, the word evolved from the Greek word for wanderer. This simply described an object which appeared to roam the sky. The new definition states that a planet must be in orbit around a star, but not be a star itself. It must also be large enough for its own gravity to pull it into an almost spherical shape. Earth, Mars, and the rest of the eight planets all conform to this pattern. Pluto's status as a planet, however, has been contested for many years. The icy world of Pluto is smaller and further away from the Sun than the other eight. Actually, it is 5.9 billion kilometres away from the Sun. In fact, at only 2,300 kilometres across, Pluto is smaller than some solar system moons. It takes Pluto about 250 Earth years to orbit the Sun, and that now puts it into the dwarf planet category. Advanced telescope technology has begun to reveal more and more far-off objects, which could perhaps be included in the solar system. The International Astronomical Union has had to draw up a policy to classify them. Astronomers have quickly realized that in a few years, we could have a total of 50 planets in our solar system. This is why they needed a new category of dwarf planet. The more planetary discoveries made, the greater the need for a redefinition of our solar system.
That is the end of question 10, and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the recording and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.